Chapter 32 Underwater Archaeology. Archaeologist George Bass, born 1932, is an expert on the Mycenaean civilization of mainland Greece. He is also one of the world's leading experts on underwater archaeology. Bass became an underwater archaeologist by chance as a graduate student at the University of Pennsylvania. The University Museum needed someone to direct the excavation of a shipwreck on the seabed off Cape Gelidonia in southwestern Turkey. They chose Bass. He knew nothing of diving, and so the museum sent him to a local youth club for some scuba training. It was an inspired choice. In 1954, Kemal Aras, a Turkish sponge diver, had spotted a pile of bronze objects off the Cape. Apparently, a ship's bottom had been ripped open on a rock. As she sank, the vessel spilled artifacts in an irregular line at a depth of almost 27 meters. Enter Peter Throckmorton, an American journalist and amateur archaeologist, who in 1959 was cataloging ancient wrecks along the coast. He realized that the shipwreck was unusually old and suggested that the museum organize a scientific excavation to investigate it, the first such deep water enterprise ever undertaken. Underwater archaeology was born. George Bass is, above all, an archaeologist. As soon as he saw the wreck, he insisted that the same standards of excavation and recording had to be upheld under the water as on land. He pointed out that the merchant ship had been carrying a cargo of goods from one place to another. This could provide vital information on ancient trade routes. It had sunk, taking its cargo to the bottom of the sea, and until its discovery many centuries later, no human had disturbed the wreck. It thus differed from archaeological sites on land, such as a hunting camp or a city, which are constantly moved or rebuilt, and are disturbed by all kinds of later human activity. They are never sealed in the same way as underwater wrecks, which often lie in deep water accessible only by divers. The Cape Gelidonia wreck lay on a bare, rocky seabed. First, Bass and his divers photographed it. They couldn't use paper to record measurements and the position of artifacts, so they relied on sheets of frosted plastic and graphite pencils that write underwater. The cargo itself consisted mainly of solid masses of copper, bronze, and artifacts that had fused together on the bottom. All Bass could do was lift the lumps using a heavy-duty car jack. Then the excavators took them apart ashore. The cargo proved a valuable one. Much of it consisted of copper ingots that could be traced back to Cyprus. And then there was tin, used to make bronze weapons. Metal was so precious that the crew had even packed bronze scrap in wicker baskets. Many of the artifacts from the wreck had come from Syria and Palestine. Bass reckoned that the ship had traveled to Cyprus to load copper and scrap metal on its way to the Aegean Sea. But when had it gone down? Painted pots and radiocarbon samples from the cargo gave a date of 1200 BC. The vessel had sunk during the Late Bronze Age. Bass moved on in 1967 from the relatively straightforward Cape Gelidonia wreck to a Byzantine ship near Yasiata, an island off western Turkey. The wreck was essentially a pile of amphora, large clay storage jars. He built two underwater towers over the ship for taking photographs. The archaeologist set up a grid over the site, just as they would at an excavation on land. Divers hovering over the grid recorded the position of every artifact before carrying it to the surface. Big hoses sucked seabed mud and shell away to be examined. This time, coins dated the shipwreck to the first half of the 7th century AD. Enough survived of the hull for the excavators to be able to study the tile-roofed galley, or ship's kitchen, that sat midway between the bow, front, and the stern, back of the ship, deep in the hull, the body of the ship. There was a tiled stove, and tableware and cooking utensils were still in place. Some iron objects had decayed inside lumps of sand and shell that littered the site. One member of the research team, Michael Katsev, sawed through the lumps, then filled them with an artificial rubber compound. When the mold was broken, he was left with a cast of the original tools, double-bladed axes, woodworking tools, files, and even a device for caulking the hull of the ship, making the joins watertight. Underwater archaeology is more time-consuming than excavation ashore. It took 3,575 dives to investigate the Yasiata ship. Its timbers were so light that divers had to clear them of sand, then pin each one to the seabed with bicycle spokes in order to measure and record it. Otherwise, the fragile wood would have floated away before being brought to the surface. One team member, Frederick von Durnick, studied records of every wood fragment, even of joints and bolt holes, to draw the hull of the 21-meter vessel. He succeeded, but both bow and stern were very incomplete. The Yasiata excavation resulted in the basic methods used to study all shipwrecks. The technology became more refined with Katsev's 1967-69 excavation of a humble Greek vessel of the 4th century BC off Kyrenia in northern Cyprus. The almost 15-meter merchant vessel had settled on its port, or left side, and had later split open. Fortunately, three-quarters of the hull timbers survived. The ship had a hard life. It was well-worn and had been repaired several times. The cargo was far from glamorous, 35 tons of almonds and amphora filled with olive oil and wine, as well as millstones. Ships like this were the anonymous traders that spent their lives sailing from port to port between the Aegean Sea and Cyprus in the eastern Mediterranean. The Kyrenia ship was an important find because it documented not wealthy royal cargoes, but humble folk going about their daily business at sea. The Kyrenia excavation was of a modest ship carrying basic goods. But there were others at sea with far more valuable cargoes, such as the heavily laden vessel that crashed onto the vicious rocks of the Uluburn Cliffs in southern Turkey in 1305 BC. We do not know why it sank. Perhaps a sudden storm hurled it onto the rocks. As the crew jumped overboard to perish in the waves, the cargo ship sank in 45 meters of water. Some 3,300 years later, sponge diver Mehmet Şakur reported to his captain that he had spotted metal objects with ears on the bottom close to the Uluburn Cliffs. For several years, underwater archaeologists had been giving talks in local ports showing pictures of what ancient shipwrecks look like. They hoped that the local sponge divers might report any ships they came across. Fortunately, the skipper had been to one of the lectures and knew that the eared objects could be copper ingots. He reported the find, and expert divers visited the wreck in 1982, confirming that it was a Bronze Age ship. Archaeologists Kamel Pulek and Don Fry from Texas A&M University, a leading center of underwater research, inspected the site in 1996. They found undisturbed rows of copper ingots and huge storage jars from Cyprus stretching more than 9 meters down a steep slope. Bass called the Uluburn ship an archaeologist's dream, not for its rich cargo, but because it was a priceless sealed time capsule of exotic goods from several lands. Tree rings from the ship's timbers dated the wreck to about 1305 BC. Even more important, it was from a period when little-known trade routes linked Egypt with Syria, Cyprus, Turkey, Crete, and the Greek mainland. The ship had gone to the bottom at a time of intense competition for the very profitable Eastern Mediterranean trade. Egypt, to the south, was a brilliant civilization at the height of its power. To the north were the Hittites, who were expert traders and warriors. In the west, the palaces of Crete and the kings of Mycenae on the mainland traded olive oil, wine, and other commodities throughout the Aegean islands. Hundreds of merchant ships plied the coasts and ports of the eastern Mediterranean. The 15-meter Uluburn ship was not unusual, and its short mast and square sail would not have stood out at a crowded quay. Only a close observer would have noticed the dozens of ingots being loaded. The vessel carried a shipment so exceptional that Bass and Pulak wondered if it could have been a royal cargo. They faced an underwater investigation of extraordinary complexity that would take years. The depth at which the wreck lay created serious problems. Divers could only spend a limited time on the bottom and had to receive doses of pure oxygen on their way back up to the surface to avoid becoming ill. Between 1984 and 1992, 18,686 dives resulted in 6,000 hours of excavation, followed by more in the last two seasons. The Uluburun excavation required exceptional teamwork, far closer than during land-based digs. Bass estimated that the laboratory analysis resulting from a month's underwater investigation was the equivalent of that generated by a year's work on land. The excavation began with teams of divers making cross-sections of the wreck and the rows of ingots. The measurements from each ingot were essential in order to reconstruct the curvature of the ship's hull. A handheld ranging and positioning system recorded the location of large objects such as stone anchors. The Uluburun ship held enough copper and tin to make 300 bronze helmets and corsets. More than 6,000 weapons lay in the holds, enough for an infantry regiment. Chemists and metal experts from Harvard and Oxford identified the distinctive elements in the copper to tie the ingots to northern Cyprus, a major copper source 3,500 years ago. The tin, essential for fabricating bronze, was much harder to pin down, but probably originated in central Turkey or Afghanistan. The lead came from Greece and Turkey. Uluburun's metals were mainly from east of the wreck site. The large storage jars aboard carried pottery from Cyprus. The amphora came from the Syrian and Palestinian coast farther east. Some of the cargo was transported in large Minoan and Mycenaean jars from the Aegean region. Egypt provided scarabs, sacred beetle ornaments, and a stone plaque inscribed with hieroglyphs. Cylinder seals, small clay or stone cylinders bearing cuneiform inscriptions, may have come from the trading city of Ugarit in northern Syria. Most likely, the Uluburun ship sailed westward from a Canaanite port in Syria to Cyprus, following a circular route traveled many times before. A ship would sail as far west as Sardinia before crossing the open Mediterranean to the North African coast and back to the Nile. Egypt would have supplied some of the exotic items on board, including short logs of ebony, the same precious black wood that was used for a bed, chair, and stool found in Tutankhamun's tomb. Gold objects, including a scarab inscribed with the name of Egyptian Queen Nefertiti, Pharaoh Tutankhamun's mother, amber beads from the Baltic coast, even a writing tablet. All this came from the wreck. Judging from the artifacts, the heavily constructed ship carried an international crew. It was a clumsy vessel, but it had a large sail which allowed it to lumber along in following winds. It carried 24 stone anchors and would have spent days at rest, waiting for favorable winds. Densely woven fiber fencing protected the deck cargo and the crew. The Uluburun ship excavation is a classic example of the kind of carefully organized teamwork that underwater archaeology requires. The vessel carried a cargo from at least 8 locations. High technology analysis and meticulous conservation and excavation have provided a unique glimpse of an international trade route that existed more than 3,000 years ago. The same methods applied on land have provided unexpected snapshots of America's first colonists.